Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is it's football sort of free agency season here. It's always wrestling season for Luke, but it is baseball season. He and I are contemplating some spring training grapefruit tours a little later on in the month, but we're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. All of it brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery, 10 times the cash. Have a handful of these left over from our week of a cup of Super Bowl. We're going to be at Fadley's on Fridays doing live radio. Hey, Nasty, when are you coming back and doing live radio? Every Friday when the Orioles are home, we'll be at Fadley's from 2 to 5. So come on down. Luke will be there talking baseball because baseball has been very, very good to me. By the way, I'm wearing my State Fair shirt, so I want to give them some love as well. The best salmon dish I've ever had in my life. Go over there, order it with the rice and the spinach and ridiculous. Our friends at Window Nation, 86690 Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare, and our newest, oldest sponsor, I got to find my hat, from Liberty Pure Solutions. Big appreciation to Doug for keeping our water clean around here. I'm going to be educating you on that, as we've been educating people on cannabis, gambling awareness month, which this is it. But March used to be a time where Luke and I would go out to Indianapolis and eat Latin food and drink all night with Marvin Lewis and Mike Smith, amongst others, and the Ryan brothers. And but now we're grown-ups. We sit here, we watch everybody else do it. It's been a tough week on the football side with the loss of Chris Mortensen around here. And Luke, I'll just say this, and you and I went, you got mad at me last week because of the windy camera blowing around and whatever. But spring training can only be so good when the games aren't on and when you can't follow it every day. And listen, I got AARP writing to me and the Rolling Stones this summer. I'm 55, right? I'm getting to that silver period in my life where, like, afternoon baseball in March at 1 o'clock, games that don't matter, watching Kowser, watching Kerstad, knowing that Stauer's name is Stauer's and not Stoughton, or Jim Fuller in this case, or Drungo Hazewood. It's March. I got a baseball heartbeat. My last name's Aparicio. I'm releasing this book on my father and my love of baseball as I release the it's like the prisoner. It's in that bottle, Luke. I'm getting rid of all the old angst. I'm getting rid of all the Peter principles. I'm finding the love of baseball that came before Peter. I'm finding the Peter era. And I'm wondering where this guy who looks like Steve Martin is going to come and save the Orioles. And but man, I really hope, and I know this is true because a normal person will own the team for the first time in 32 years. This next spring training, we're going to feel differently about spring training because it's going to be big business for them and they're going to put the games on and we're going to want to watch them. And you and I are probably going to be reacting to spring training games because we're going to have watched them and our audience is going to have watched them.
Yeah. And let's be clear. We don't want to overreact to spring training games either. I mean, the Orioles 9-1 through their first 10 Grapefruit League games. Does that mean anything in the grand scheme of things? Absolutely not.
How many of them have you seen personally? Three?
I've seen four because they played the Pirates in Bradenton a couple times, and the Pirates, as you know, living in Southern Pennsylvania, I get the Pirates regional sports network.
I've seen two.
Yeah. So you have that, but your point is well taken, and I'll give you a perfect example. As I'm on the subject of the Pirates, Orioles playing the Pirates, as they did on Sunday, the Orioles hosted the Pirates in Sarasota last Thursday. So we're talking less than a full week into the start of spring training games. It was a matchup that featured Paul Skeens, who was the first overall pick this past year of the Pittsburgh Pirates, on the bump for Pittsburgh, against the Orioles with Jackson Holliday, the number one pick from the year before that in 2022.
That's as good a drama as you're going to find in March right there.
MLB, right? The official Twitter account for MLB, the Instagram account, all the social you could find was talking about this matchup. MLB Network was talking about it. Well, all that publicity was great until you realized what? The game wasn't on TV, so
it's unthinkable. I mean, but again, I consider him bitch till the cows come home. It's going to change, and because of that, I can feel differently. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to feel differently in my soul, in my conscience, in my oh, this makes sense to care about this team because maybe they will care about Baltimore again. Maybe they'll care about their customers again. Like I just, it's been the most mind-boggling thing of all of it. Like in 20 years that these creeps were handed a television 20 years ago. 20 years ago, they were handed a television network to promote their prime product, the only thing they own other than a half-bankrupt law firm, the baseball team. And they never, I mean, forget the baseball team. They could never even get television right. They woke up with $220 million a year to function a television network, and they still couldn't do it. I mean, it's the level of incompetence would be malfeasance if it were being held to more scrutiny than just me. But it's, I'm just happy we're getting to the end of it. And like, as I release the book on my father on his birthday on Tuesday, and as I talk about the Peter principles and release that, just to let people know like how bad it got, and how a guy named Aparicio, who's ordering 1971 milk duds. I got an Aparicio milk duds. I didn't even know it existed until recently. That I'm like, I want to be in love with baseball again. Here I am. Here I am. I got a radio station. I got a big audience, huge audience, growing, huge. You should look at the numbers. And fans are going to come back next month. The people that have been in the soap opera, we talked about wrestling at length here this week. People that are in the soap opera, they don't care whether it's Sting or Rock or Hulk Hogan or, you know, wheel Ric Flair, and they're going to watch it. Like, if 115 losses, if you're watching that, you're watching anything. I'm trying to figure out how they become the toast of the city again. And I've got DNA for that. I mean, I was born into it. Let's start with that. Off of 66, 69, 70, 71, 79, 83, all the ticket stubs I've been going through and the memories with my dad. Like, I want to buy in. I hope this transition and these rumors that Evan Drellick, who I text this weekend, writing that this could be over in 24 days. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a month around here. I mean, like, really, like, if this thing is really over, and the last we've seen of John Angelos has had his head down in the owner suite in Sarasota the other day, if that's really the end, to me, this is like a Halloween episode where like Jamie Lee Curtis keeps stabbing the thing with the like, and it never goes away. I'm wondering when it goes away, we'll have spring training baseball. I mean, I'm convinced of that. Like, that's such an obvious thing to me that next year they can make this big theater and they're going to win 100 games again. They might win the World Series or not, but like, this is a time of the year that the NFL has gotten right. Right? We're on combines, nothing, underwear Olympics. We're on free agency and pre-tampering. We're going to be talking about tampering next week. Like, it never ends. Baseball has this beautiful thing that they do that the Orioles have missed out on.
Yeah, look, as far as grabbing new people to what you're pointing to, I don't know if the end-all be-all is more spring training games. I certainly agree there should be more spring training games, and I think there will be, although far more complicated figuring out what Masson and all that's going to look like moving forward. The end of the John Angelos era is going to bring, yes, new ownership, but new ownership having to figure out these issues that plague all baseball teams at this point. I was just reading over the weekend how splintered and fractured the Yankees TV rights are with Amazon Prime and all kinds of, I mean, for a Yankees fan, if you're living in that market, to everything you have to be subscribed to watch. I mean, these are issues that are not going to be fixed
much
overnight.
Like the NFL telling me I had to have Peacock to get a playoff game.
Sure, exactly, right? Exactly. So these are issues that are not going to be fixed overnight with the new ownership group, but you're absolutely right. My hope is, if not every single spring training home game, at least most of them, right?
But this is certainly a really good spring training. More, not that every spring training is not interesting if the team's competitive. And one of the problems here is the team hasn't been competitive enough over the long haul to make March. I'm the only one screaming about it in March, but it's such an obvious thing, to your point. It doesn't need to be the number one overall Pirates prospect just to make it like a part of my life in March when the Terps stink and I'm not interested in March Madness and I'm not watching a hockey game and you're playing in the middle of the day, which could get me into lunch with Joe Enoch and Bill Cole over at wherever. Why? Like, I just, Make me love the team again. I mean, for God's sake, for God's sake, this team's so worth that. These players are worth that. Everybody I talk to out of the market is in love with Adley Rutschman or in love with Gunnar Henderson, and they want to know what Jackson Holliday's up to. And we're not even talking Holliday. Like, the question this week, if we were watching the games, would be Kowser, Kerstedt, Stowers. What happens to the rest of them? Let alone what happens with contracts with Hayes, Mullen, Santander. Like, they've got a lot of players and a lot of decisions to make and pitching they need, right? So we could be beating this around 4 hours a day taking phone calls. It's how WNST was born, was doing this super duper level interest in the baseball team on a daily basis to know who the setup to the setup guy is in the sixth inning.
Sure. I would slightly alter what you said when you said make me love the team again. I would say make it easier for me to love the team, because it is such an exciting product on the heels of a 101 win season, and you have all these young players, yet you're making it difficult for me to consume and engage and interact with your product this time of year. That aside, we know what that is. We know what that's been. We know what it's hopefully going to be starting next spring. There are a lot of interesting questions about this team, and I'm glad you brought up the outfield, because I even wrote about this at BaltimorePositive.com late last week. Jackson Holliday is the number one headline. We get that, and rightfully so, talking about a kid who isn't going to have his first legal beer until later on in 2024, after the season's over. We know he's going to be in Baltimore at some point, assuming the worst doesn't happen, an injury along those lines. Question is going to be, is he going to be here opening day? And that remains to be seen.
Well, there's also a positional issue with what him being here opening day does to a lot of other players. It moves dominoes. Just that alone moves the lineup.
It does. It's not as though he's blocked or that someone else is necessarily blocked, in the sense of, okay, you have Jorge Mateo, you have Ramon Urias, guys who I think still bring some value off the bench. Urias with his versatility, Mateo certainly with his speed, defensive shortstop. He actually started a game in center field in Bradenton on Sunday. I think that's a big key for his value coming off the bench now, because we saw late last year, as it was going on, Gunnar Henderson became the primary shortstop. And now Jackson Holliday, who presumably, whether it's opening day, whether it's May 1st, whether it's the beginning of June, he's going to be most likely the primary second baseman, but we'll also still see plenty of shortstop. Jordan Westberg can play shortstop. In fact, saw him make a really nice play the other day, making a start at shortstop. So if you're Jorge Mateo, your value to this team is not just, okay, you can play a backup shortstop, and albeit at a high level defensively, it's needing more versatility. So the Jackson Holliday question still for me comes down to, is he ready? And I'll continue to remind everyone, 91 career plate appearances at AAA. If the club deems him not quite ready, if they want to see him make more regular starts at second base, as we talked about in a previous conversation, he averaged about a start per week at second base last year. So we're not talking about someone who's extremely experienced there. Although I have no doubt that he's going to play a quality second base. But if you want to give him a little more seasoning with stakes that aren't quite as high, depending on, you know, what the bat has looked like over the course of spring, you know, you look at it early on, he has struck out a good bit early on in camp. I'm not reading too much into that. I'm just presenting that to you. So I think it's to be determined. But, you know, the point with him is, you know, there's going to be a spot for him whenever they deem the time to be right for him to make his debut, whether it's opening day or shortly thereafter. I do think the acquisition of, you know, the signing of Colton Wong was interesting on that front. If they view him as potentially a placeholder, if they want to give Jackson Holliday a little more AAA seasoning, you know, but I don't, it's a minor league deal. Just because Colton Wong is on the minor league roster and one of the invitees doesn't mean that Jackson Holliday isn't making the opening day roster.
I thought it was interesting that he played with his father. I thought that was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about the fact Colton Wong? Well, not just that, I'll give you another one. Colton Wong was drafted by the Cardinals in the final year that Mike Elias and Sig Meidel were part of the Cardinals organization before, you know, they went with Jeffrey Luhnow to Houston. So there's a little bit of I don't know if you call it serendipity or just fun coincidence. But I think, you know, that was interesting to see, but I don't think it's a deal breaker one way or the other, you know, in terms of what's going to happen with Jackson Holliday. I think it's still a TBD. I think you want to see him look like he's at the plate with confidence. You know, he's had a couple extra base hits. It's not as though he hasn't, you know, he's been awful or anything like that, but I'll remind everyone, 91 plate appearances at AAA. He's 20. He had a 796 OPS in AAA, which is more than holding your own, but it's not so extraordinary where anyone needs to say, well, they're holding this kid back. You know, if they ultimately determine, hey, we're going to start him at AAA for a month, 3 weeks, whatever it is. And who knows? You never know what's going to happen in the sense of Grayson Rodriguez started the year at AAA last year. Kyle Bradish takes a comebacker off his foot, and then Grayson Rodriguez was starting first time through the rotation. So you never really know on that front. But I want to get back to what you had mentioned, because I think that's, for me, there's more meat on the bone to the discussion. I just kind of covered the Jackson Holliday debate, and that's kind of where we are right now. And that's not to say it's not exciting or interesting or compelling, but that's kind of where it is. Is he ready, or are they going to slow play it a little bit more? And again, if they deem that to be the case, that they'd rather slow play him a little bit and send him the AAA for a little bit of time, I'm okay with that. You know, I don't think that's going to make or break their season, that decision alone. So I think you do look at the outfield. And I think what's so compelling, and you touched on this briefly, but I think back to where the Orioles were 3 or 4 years ago, you know, when we were still talking about this thing being not in the infancy of the rebuild, but still, you know, the elementary school years of the rebuild, if we want to call it that. There wasn't a whole lot to hang their hat on. I mean, let's, you know, I'm stating the obvious there, but what was one of the early factors that you could kind of point to and say, all right, that looks like it's promising? It was the outfield. You know, it was those holdovers from the end of the Duquette era. You had Anthony Santander, who was a former Rule 5 pick and, you know, had issues staying on the field and staying healthy. But when he would stay healthy, you saw the pop. You know, you saw that he could be a player. Certainly with Cedric Mullins, you know, albeit ups and downs. Same thing with Austin Hayes, ups and downs in terms of staying healthy, in terms of some consistency. But those three, I mean, we're talking about assuming Santander is going to be in right field and not at the DH spot, which is possible given how things were playing out at the end of last year. This could be the fourth straight opening day where it's Hayes, Mullins, Santander manning the three outfield spots. I mean, that shows you what kind of continuity they've had in the outfield. You know, that was kind of the earliest position group that was in place in terms of this rebuild. But we're now reaching a different point, right? We now have Colton Cowser, who has 523 career or plate appearances at AAA. You have Heston Kerstad, who's just over 330 plate appearances in AAA. Kyle Stowers, who's kind of been a forgotten man, but he's off to a good start in spring training. Again, it's spring training. I'm not reading too much into the numbers, but he was on the opening day roster last year, and we kind of forgot about him because he got off to a bad start, and he's not the same highly touted top five draft pick as those other guys. So inherently, he's not going to be viewed through the same lens. But the point is, they've got some really interesting options that you really, it'd be hard to argue. Unlike Jackson Holliday, it's hard to argue any of those guys have much to prove at AAA at this point. I mean, yeah, they've all put up numbers at Norfolk. They've all put up, you know, ample plate appearances. I mean, Kerstad being the one who has the least, and he has half a season at AAA Norfolk at this point, you know, in terms of at bats. So you have these three guys. I'm not at all implying that they're all going to be starters or they're all going to succeed at the major league level. We know some prospects aren't going to work out. And, you know, good spring aside, Kyle Stowers to this point in his major league career, it hasn't looked so great. You know, Colton Cowser, albeit it was only 60 plate appearances or whatever it was, he really struggled last year. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's talked about it. So you never know. But at the same time, if you're Mike Elias, if you're looking at this thing, not just through the 2024 lens, but in the big picture sense, you are reaching an inflection point because Anthony Santander is going to be a free agent at the end of this year. And he's making a lot of money in the final year of arbitration. And I'm not saying that that's the deciding factor. And oh, he's automatically gone, but he's hitting free agency after this year. Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins have one more year after this until they become free agents. And the question starts to become, who are you committing to long-term? And who of these young guys, you know, one, how are you going to get them opportunities and at bats at the major league level and start to have them factor into the equation? And, you know, the question is, are these guys, when they get a chance to play, one, are they going to succeed? And two, if they do succeed, do you get to a point where they are potentially upgrades over some of the guys that I just mentioned, some of the mainstays? And I think that's where this is such an interesting conversation, because not that you're basing it off of what happens in the spring, but you have these guys who are, for lack of a better term, ready to sink or swim at the major league level. So how do you account for that? That's not at all to imply that you just trade away the veterans, or you bench them, or you trade the prospects, but how do you factor that in? And I think this is where you look at where they are with the incumbent starters, and you kind of say, okay, how can you factor in a Colton Cowser a little more regularly into the lineup? And I think the rationale behind that, for me anyway, is Santander, while he stayed healthy the last couple of years, injury history. We saw him last year DHing more than he had in previous years, because he's slowing down a little bit, you know, as he gets closer to 30. He's certainly not someone who covers a ton of ground, but he's a right fielder, and there's no problem with that. But I look at Cedric Mullins, who had an injury plagued 2023. I look at Austin Hayes, who, look, was a great story as an all-star in the first half last year. Go look at what his second half numbers were. He really slowed down at the plate, you know, really wore down. So for me, and I think we saw this last year, I think the blueprint was there with Aaron Hicks. But for me, it's, and I kind of look at Colton Cowser because he's the most versatile from a defensive standpoint, more so than Kerstad. How do you work him into the lineup? Not that he becomes a regular in the sense that he replaces one of those guys, but you can kind of view it through the lens of, maybe you have four guys that become your primary outfielders, also using the DH spot there. And then that's a way to keep Santander and keep Cedric Mullins and keep Austin Hayes a little more fresh over the course of the season, and hoping that it keeps them productive and keeps them healthy. And in the meantime, then you're hoping Colton Cowser takes those at-bats, takes those plate appearances and runs with it, you know, or Heston Kerstad or whoever you're talking about, Kyle Stowers. So I think that's a really intriguing point, part of this the spring training narrative with these outfielders, because you have so many guys, and yes, the young guys are unproven, and I don't want to say that you just hand them a roster spot either, because you know, I'll give you one example. Mike Boddicker spent parts of four seasons where he made extensive starts at AAA Rochester. I mean, it's not unprecedented that someone's blocked and kind of has to just occupy time down in AAA. But at the same time, you have these heralded prospects, that you have this great farm system. You want to maximize their value in terms of either putting them in the major league lineup and having them start to develop and become a part of your major league team. Or in the case of some guys, as we saw with Joey Ortiz, you trade them, you know, you package them as to go get a pitcher.
Well, that's where I was going to come in and talk about that, because like the notion that they have too many guys could mean a very, very good thing at the trading deadline. Sure. If somebody's hitting 312 at Norfolk and they're blocked, right? Like literally.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I think it's tough, because I made mention of this. Look, if I'm being totally honest with you, and I'm not talking about this through the lens of imagining what the Orioles payroll could look like under new ownership. I'm just looking at the players, how the players profile. I look at Anthony Santander and I look at Cedric Mullins and I look at Austin Hayes. I look what's in the pipeline coming, you know, Enrique Bradfield, that was their first round pick last year. He's not going to be in the majors this year, but it's not inconceivable that maybe by next year at some point he's ready and can maybe be the center fielder. Again, a lot has to happen between now and then. But point is, I don't necessarily look at any of these outfielders right now and say that those guys are the kind of players that scream contract extension in the same way that everyone's talking about Adley Rutschman or Gunnar Henderson right now. Now, let me be clear what that means. That doesn't mean that Santander is automatically gone next year. That doesn't mean that Hayes or Mullins is automatically gone after next year. But I think you just view it through the lens of where are you going with your outfield? If you're Mike Elias right now, what do you see the outfield being on opening day, which I think everyone can predict right now? It's the three incumbents, barring an unforeseen trade. But what does that look like at the All-Star break? What does that look like at the end of this year? What does that look like in October? What does that look like next spring? You know, is Santander someone that maybe you bring back on a shorter term deal because you like what how he profiles as a DH in his age 30 and 31 seasons? And he also probably isn't someone that's going to command a ton of money on the open market if you look at how free agency goes. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I think that's a question mark there. But, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Cedric Mullins, he's got to stay healthy this year. You know, Austin Hayes has to put together a full 162 or 145 game season where he's not dipping offensively as much as he has in the second
half. There's nobody
half.
Here who's really been paid, right? No, like, I mean, making $8, $10 million and not that that's not paid, it's paid, but
right.
Getting a contract, you know, there's plenty of money in the coffers, to your point, with new ownership coming in, how they spend that money, how they're going to allocate that. You want Mike Elias to decide that with the new billionaire group and Cal Ripken and whoever's involved in this, right? That's the way you want this done. I saw that the Commander's new owner sitting in on the meetings in Indianapolis was a rage down the highway the other day. I'm like, well, you know, new ownership, there's going to be things that are good, things that are bad. You got to hope most of it's going to be better. We began this whole thing with how bad the television part of their product is in March. But the decision-making for all of this is that there are a lot of hungry cats here who won 101 games last year. There's several of these guys that were here when the team lost 115 mm-hmm. before that. So there's just a lot of hunger here amongst everybody in the organization. That's one of the reasons this thing can be so celebratory, because people, if they have been disengaged, if they come back to the ballpark and come back to the team, they're going to get a much better version of the team, not just on the field, off the field for the future, but whatever the buy-in is of my 162 days of my life and going from Peacock this to Comcast that to Xfinity this to Verizon that to the app this to giving people money to $12 for beers down at the ballpark. I think they're $12. All of that becomes worthwhile because, like, they're a better franchise, you know, and they're perceived as a better franchise in that way by people like me who care about what a franchise is and know the difference between good and bad and ugly, you know, through the course of time. But my thought on all of this is there's a hunger. Every name you mention is somebody who could go out this year and have a career year. Any of those guys they're all capable. And maybe it's Hayes that's having that incredible year. He's hitting .318. He's got 21 bombs at the All-Star break. I'm making that up. But, like, yeah, that he becomes the guy they deal, you know, to get something. I don't know, but they're going to be feelings hurt, because that's part of this too. Because all these guys aren't going to be pile diving at the end, as Buck would say, right? Like, there's going to be some movement here. And if you go back and look at the Astros' history at spring trainings and things that they needed to do to go get Verlander or whatever, names are going to change here, and they're going to be, don't get too comfortable with the jersey and the name on the back. We've been trying to deal Mountcastle for a couple of years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Austin Hayes just as an example. And look, I think the scenario is much more that Austin Hayes is maybe, and I'm going to stay with the same example, but I'll give you a different scenario using that same player. Let's say Austin Hayes isn't having a monster year like that. Let's just say he's having a solid Austin Hayes kind of year. But for me, what's more exciting in a big picture sense is that Colton Cowser has forced his way into the equation, and they're kind of playing those four outfielders are playing over the course of the week. And, you know, Santander is getting a day off a week. Mullins is getting a day or two off a week. Hayes is getting a day or two off. You know, and when I say they get a day or two off, maybe they're DHing, right? I mean, point is, you're doing what you did at the end of last year with Aaron Hicks still in the equation, only it's Colton Cowser now, or it could be Kerstedt. I'm just using that as an example. What I like is the idea that one of the young guys is forcing his way into more and more playing time. And now you have the scenario of, okay, want some more pitching at the trade deadline. How's this going to work out? Can we package some prospects? And okay, we're going to take on a big contract. Austin Hayes, you know, he's going to be entering his final year of arbitration. Salary's probably going to go up. We don't know if he's going to be one of our best three outfielders anymore because Colton Cowser and Heston Kerstad are hitting the cover off the ball. That might be a scenario where maybe you do trade a veteran player in, you know, for whatever bullpen help, another starting pitcher, whatever it is. And again, I'm just spitballing off the top of my head, but the point is,
the possibilities are endless, honestly.
Sure. And look, I mean, someone listening who loves Austin Hayes, it might be one of the young guys being traded. Let me be clear about that. I'm not saying that automatically Heston Kerstad and Colton Cowser are going to be outfielders of the future.
Well, this situation
here
will work itself out, and somebody's going to get injured and, you
sure,
know, and create an opportunity because that's just the way the odds are, right? Literally.
And I think that's the big key here. Look, if there's something that we can glean from what we've seen as the Orioles have kind of made this transition from, think about the first half of 2022, right? Right around the time that Adley Rutschman arrived is when they started winning, right? They had the really good second half. You know, they were in the wild card race, you know, whether you thought it was real or not, they were in it. Mathematically, they were absolutely in it in September 2 years ago. But certainly you had what happened last year. You have all kinds of scenarios with injuries. You know, we're seeing this on the pitching side right now, although it sounds like Kyle Bradish is going to throw a bullpen this week. It sounds like so far so good. We'll see. I think now is when we start to see, okay, is this real? You know, some long toss, okay, but it gets on the mound and starts throwing bullpens and he's feeling good then. That's when I think you can allow yourself to be a little more optimistic. But we'll see. We're still, you know, we'll see how that plays out in the next week or so, you know, week to 10 days. But what we have seen with Mike Elias is the roster churn hasn't been as dramatic. I think if you go back to you and I talking at the end of last season, I think the Orioles had, what, 16 guys that were arbitration eligible? I think that was the number. They had the most in baseball. And I said at that point, and I wasn't alone in saying this, that my prediction was you were going to see, I don't know, whether it's Ramon Urias or Jorge Mateo, or go down the list of, you know, a couple bullpen arms. My prediction was you were going to see a couple guys end up being non-tendered, and that ended up not being the case. You know, they tendered these guys. You know, they, all of them, as it stands right now, and I understand that doesn't mean they're here on opening day, but they're still in the mix. Point is, the roster churn hasn't been quite as dramatic, quite as swift as we might have anticipated it being at the this past offseason. So I think Mike Elias values the organizational depth. I think Mike Elias would rather have some prospects blocked at Triple-A than to deal them away and then be in a position that Austin Hayes turns his ankle and you don't have Colton Cowser ready to go at Norfolk, or you don't have Heston Kerstad ready to go, or Kyle Stowers. So I think we've seen that churn not be quite as rapid as some might have thought, you know, given you have these outfielders that are seemingly ready to go. So that's where I think it's a good problem to have, but I think it is something that they have to figure out here. So, you know, we saw the big trade. You know, the Corbin Burnes trade was the monster trade, but other trades they've made have been, you know, less dramatic. You know, they've been more, okay, we've traded a couple guys in our system that, you know, we kind of sort of liked, but they weren't like our top guys, you know.
And also signing veteran quad A guys like Wong, right?
Sure. I mean, Colton Wong, they brought in Julio Teheran, who, you know, I don't think is going to be in the rotation, but he could be the long man out of the bullpen, you know, the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, that's possible. So, you know, but Mike Elias values that depth. And if anything, he wants to hoard that depth rather than trade from it too quickly, right?
Oh,
to trade
God.
From
it. And to have chess pieces in July,
sure,
when you're four games up on the Blue Jays and six up on the Yankees and like, and you're like, all right, we've got five major league outfielders. We need piece X, whatever that would be, right? And they're not going to need a catcher. They're not going to need middle infield help. They're not, you know, like they need pitching. And at some point, bats will get your arms to some degree if you're giving somebody something they need in a pennant race. And the more teams that are in the pennant race, and we know that that's the way baseball is, the more likely this becomes. And I mean, this is really something we've never, ever, ever, ever seen the Orioles do here, right? This is something the Rays would do. This was something the Yankees used to do back in the day when they could really have depth 30, 25, 30 years ago, where they would get players because they had more money than anybody else, that you could deal from the bottom of the deck because you have so much depth. I've been doing this 32 years, my 33rd year talking Oriole baseball on the radio. I've never spoken of, I mean, dude, 30 of the 32 years, you'd say, who are they going to deal? They don't have anybody else wants. Like, that went on forever. They never had a piece to deal, ever. And now we could talk about half the roster being dealable.
Well, I mean, I think back to what was it, 2014, when they ended up getting Andrew Miller. But if you recall, the big name that was being talked about at that point in time that the Orioles were potentially trying to trade for was John Lester. But the thought at the time was, well, you have Dylan Bundy or you have Hunter Harvey. That's about all you had in your system at that point in time that you could potentially deal.
And notice they
And
were arms, by the way, too. They
right,
were
right. But
right.
the point is, at any point, whether you're talking the Duquette era, whether you're talking about the Pat Gillick era, when whether you're talking about Roland Heeman, going way back for you. I mean, it's been since the mid 80s, it was the early 80s when, I mean, the Orioles, the golden, the Oriole way, the golden era of Orioles baseball, they were so flush with prospects from the early 60s through the early 80s. Just take your pick of
But when it
guys
comes
who.
to prospects, dude, I'm older than you. I can start throwing names at
Yeah.
you of guys who
Well,
couldn't miss: Bob Baylor, Drungo Hazewood, Jim Fuller, Ken Gerhart, Craig Worthing. Just go through the list of
sure.
Alex Ochoa, and then guys like Jeffrey Hammonds, Jake Arrieta. I'm just going the guys that became something when they left, or
Yeah.
even Don Baylor, Bobby Grich, who became even better when they left and made more money and like all of that. Like, I've seen all the eras of all the eras there are. I mean, we talked about this with the Ravens last year, the best team we've ever seen that them have and balance and like all of those things. It doesn't win, as we know, right? You win when you win. But the number one organization in baseball from a depth perspective per Baseball America and everybody else, right? They won 101 games. They're about to get an owner who's going to have some level of competence that has to be beyond what we've seen here before. And we're no longer talking about them playing in the big bad American League East. We're no longer talking about them not having a chance to make the playoffs because everybody can make the playoffs now. You can win 88, 89, 90 games and maybe get in. So it's just there's a level of prosperity here for them all the way around. But the depth of the organization and the fact that they enter this era of strength with such an abundance of talent, there's no way they're not going to make deals, dude. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way somebody you love, one of all these names of this rich list of prospects, some Westberg, Kowser, Kerstad, Mullins, Hayes, these guys are going to get dealt. In the same way that everybody got their feelings hurt when they dealt the first baseman a couple years ago, and we didn't even mention him anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only scenario where you don't see a move or two at some point, whether it's by opening day or whether it's by the trade deadline, would be the scenario like what the Rays endured last year, which if you just have so many injuries that you're just having to hold on to people. I
Yeah.
mean, that's really the only scenario, but it is wild. I mean, just to finish a previous thought, I mean, even some of the prospects that you just named, Nestor, going back to the 80s or 90s, I mean, those were still scenarios where the Orioles needed that guy to make it because they didn't have much else, right? I mean, Jeffrey
Always.
Hammonds was that guy. Like if it wasn't Jeffrey Hammonds, it's like, oh, great. Well, who's going to be the next Cal? Who's going to be the next star for this team? They have so much depth that they're dealing from such a position of strength there that you probably have to go back to the Paul Richards era of the Orioles of the kiddie core and like, all the bonus babies. And my God, you're talking about a different sport, a different era, a different generation, all that. I mean, it's not remotely the same, but that's the kind of depth that they have in their system right now. But you're right. I mean, it leads to some tough decisions. And, I'll throw one name out. I mentioned this in passing and where it's so interesting. The Orioles were at a point and I don't need to tell you this, but this is for our listeners and especially for younger listeners. The Orioles were at a point in the early 80s where things were so good for so long that Mike Boddicker, who ended up having a heck of a major league career and had a heck of a run for the Orioles, Mike Boddicker, one start in AAA in 1978 when he after he was drafted, 12 starts in AAA Rochester in 1979. 25 starts in AAA Rochester in 1980. 29 starts in
1979. Mike Flanagan, Cy Young. 1980, Steve Young. Steve Stone, Cy Young. Keep going.
Scott McGregor, 20 game winner. Jim Palmer was still hanging around. The point is,
Dennis Martinez couldn't get starts.
And I'm not comparing the Orioles out.
He's better than any of these guys we mentioned in the end.
But. The point I'm not trying to make here is that the Orioles outfield is what the Orioles starting rotation was in the late 70s into the early 80s. The point is, when you have an organization that has great depth, sometimes you'll have, now that was on the extreme side, and you wouldn't see anyone making 12 plus starts 4 years in a row at AAA that's worth anything, right? And mind you, he had really good ERAs each of those years too. I think his worst out of those 4 years, he had a 4.2 ERA. You know, it wasn't, you know, he was okay in 1981. Wasn't anything special in Rochester. But point is, you had an organization at that point in time that had so much major league depth and had so much depth waiting there at AAA. You know, it's where it reminds you a little tiny bit, as much as it can, anything in 2024 can compare to the early 80s, you know, in the tiniest way. That's kind of what you're seeing that right now with the thought of, you know, is there going to be a spot for Colton Cowser? Is there going to be a spot for Heston Kerstad? What about Kyle Stowers, who's hit three home runs early on in spring and is hitting lefties and looks as good as he's looked in a couple years? It's a good problem to have.
Stocks up.
They got to figure it out. And look, hey, you just said it. Maybe the solution is Kyle Stowers will get packaged with, you know, one of their better prospects and maybe someone else that's a B prospect for them. And maybe that'll go get a starting pitcher or another reliever, as I pointed out, something that I'd still
like
to see
them at. Looks
like
that's the plan. Hey, dude, go hit the cover off the ball. We'll send you to St. Louis and you'll have a happy life or whatever.
Yeah, right? And I want to remind everyone, it's spring training. And as much as the Orioles aren't going to be fooled by spring training stats, most other organizations that are smart shouldn't be fooled by spring training stats.
Hey, you know what
stats,
I would say, and we can end it on this, because if I were down there having drinks with these kids, and I did that with every Matt Riley and every, you know, just every Rock Reigns down the list for years, you know, for 30 years, I was pretty close to the team in and out and around, even after they threw me out for a couple of years. Wouldn't be such a bad thing if you get dealt to the wherever, you know, like
sure.
If you're on in this organization, yeah, you want to be here and all that. But if you're getting blocked and they're saying to you, dude, you're going to be a platoon player here, you're going to be this or that. I mean, Mateo's going to have to live with that, right? Like a lot of guys are going to have to live with, dude, I'm going to get 171 at bats this year, and that's going to be my major league year. By the way, you mentioned Boddicker in 81. That was a strike year. I bet they just hit him at AAA to have him, you know, when there's no baseball, you hide your quad A guys and let them play, because the minor leagues play. So, you know, I'm just thinking, we don't have that to worry about around here, but getting blocked, to your point, getting Boddicker got blocked. It would have been better for Mike Boddicker's career in 1980 if they had dealt him off to some godforsaken place like the Mets, because he would have been their number three starter and pitched. Might have gotten his brains beaten in, might have had bad defense behind him. You know, like, we can go through all of that, but there is a part where service time and playing, and to your point, 91 at bats for AAA for Holiday. Yeah, if you need more seasoning there, you need more seasoning. But all of these issues, and I go back to, I'd like to be watching these games on TV every day.
Sure.
You know, I wouldn't mind having the major league package and paying the 99 cents per month or whatever it is to have it. And but we're going to talk some football. Are we good with baseball? Is there any other grapefruit thing you need to say about baseball?
I just had to mention it because you just mentioned guys being blocked. Just saw a highlight the other day. Joey Ortiz hitting a two-run homer for the Milwaukee Brewers in spring training action. There's a perfect example of
he's
someone
who's going to be on a major league roster.
Absolutely blocked.
Or has a chance to. Where here he wasn't going to be that.
I mean, he was blocked. He was already blocked before Jackson Holliday got to Norfolk. So You're not going to be able to keep everyone.
Well, he's known for a long time. He was playing to play in another organization.
Probably. Yeah, probably. I
In
mean,
the
maybe
same
the.
way that Patrick Queen knew every time he went out there with a Raven helmet on, he was going to put his body on the line. He was doing it to get signed by our next segment. That's a good segue, isn't it?
That was. That was good.
Yeah, I'm professional. I've done this a long time. Luke Jones is here. They wonder why I don't sound like a podcaster, because I'm not one. Maryland Lottery sponsors are 10 times the cash. We're going to be getting out and doing the Crab Cake Tour. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. I went in there I went to Beaumont the last two Saturdays for brunch. If I give anybody a recommendation that you should take, go to the Beaumont for brunch on the weekends. Unbelievable. But we were at State Fair across the street. I got some salmon, rice, and this spinach. It was like one of the best things I've had. Like, I mean, I might go get it for lunch today. I mean, and my father loved fish, honor his birthday on the 5th. We're releasing the book I wrote in 2006 about my father's love of baseball, my family, my Aparicio card collection, amongst other things. Just how baseball started all this and how the last 18 years, the issue's gotten off the track. Later on in the month, Lucas and I are threatening to go down to Florida and chase the Orioles around. I'm looking for David Rubenstein. We'll be having some fun with all that. Also, the NFL's still in bloom, and we're going to be talking a lot of NFL. We're going to be talking free agency, tampering, and all that good stuff. Our friends at Window Nation, as well as Liberty Pure and Jiffy Lube, putting us out on the road for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're going to be doing every Friday that the Orioles are home live from Fadley's. Fadley's Fridays from 2 until 5. It'll all be brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. So come down and get a crab cake. I spent the whole month of January not having a crab cake, and then I had like 5 in a row in the early part of February. But I'm about to make my comeback at Costas this week with a big, fat crab cake sandwich. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore, positive, and crab cakes and baseball and stuff.